The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is Richard McCall for Columbia Calling, and this is episode 351 of the Columbia Calling podcast, coming to you from 2,600 meters above sea level in Bogota, Colombia. I think you'll all agree that episode 350 was a phenomenal episode, and a great big thank you to Kevin McCaffrey and Callie for sharing his horrendous story of being drugged with scopolamine and having his bank account emptied in Cartagena, Colombia. It could have happened to all of us. It could have happened. It could happen to many of us. Honey trap, let's say, style of robbery. Very, very horrifying, very, very terrifying story. And so thank you to Kevin for sharing that so openly. And quite amazing how positive that he's come out of this. For those of you interested in seeing a little bit more of Columbia Calling, we've launched a YouTube channel. We did a first episode. It was out on Friday this last week, with Emma Louise Jay in El Retiro and Adrian Alsema in Medellin, director of Columbia Reports. We did a satirical Columbia politics show. If you like it, let us know. Leave a comment, because depending on how the pickup is whether we'll do another one. Hopefully we can do them every fortnight and just talk a little bit about the ridiculous nature of politics in this country and culture and society. So just look up Columbia Calling on YouTube and you'll find that there. Please take a look at our Patreon campaign, of course. We're there. Anything you can give from as little as $2 a month helps us improve and push the podcast further. If you have some cash spare and if you decide to sponsor us from $25 a month and upwards, in early 2021, you'll be getting T-shirts, mugs, stickers, Columbia Calling stuff, courtesy of me here in Columbia. And of course, it will go to wherever you are in the world. So you can therefore wear the Columbia Calling stuff with pride. I would also like to mention Norteric. Norteric is a new age of cybersecurity. It will be developing and managing a comprehensive plan for your organization. Prioritize and design your strategies and investments in a real time, reducing risk, satisfying cybersecurity responsibility, and saving money. So learn more at norteric.com. That's, of course, a long-time listener. It's his company, and he'll be expanding into Colombia in the Spanish-speaking world. Name is Adam Nunn, and his company is norteric.com. So just check that out and send him an email. Take a look at the website, norteric.com. I'll leave you now in the capable hands of Emily Hart with the newscast for this week. A big thank you, as always, to Emily for her great dedication to this. And, of course, taking the time out of her busy week as a freelance journalist in Colombia to provide us with this update each week that I know so many of you enjoy. And I've only received positive feedback on this response. This episode 351, we take a different tack and we're talking to Miguel Cuadros, who's there in Bucaramanga, Santander. And we take into account something from the last World Cup when, we think that with that World Cup, when Yepes might have scored a goal, and we consider with Miguel what would have happened in Colombia. How would the politics have unraveled in Colombia had that goal gone in? Quite an interesting one to consider, and of course one that will sit uncomfortably in the hearts of most Colombians. So, of course, stay tuned for this episode. Quite interesting indeed, if we take into account the politics that could have unraveled or indeed been firm after a goal which would have beaten Brazil and taken Colombia into the semi-finals of the World Cup. How would have this affected the country? So stay tuned, don't go away, and we'll be right back after the newscast with Emily Hart. Thank you.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Colombia Calling for the week of November 16th, 2020. Colombia's coast is on high alert in the face of tropical storm Iota, particularly the archipelago of San Andres and Providencia. The storm could soon become a full-force Category 4 hurricane, according to meteorologists. Emergencies have been registered on both Pacific and Caribbean coasts, from Chocó and Antioquia to Bolívar and Huila. In Dabeiba, Antioquia, three people were killed by a landslide amid the torrential rain, with another 18 still missing. In the west of Chocó, rivers overflowed and destroyed an estimated 700 homes. The Caribbean city of Cartagena has seen floods up to waist height, displacing many. This week, in Córdoba, three members of the same family were killed, one of whom was part of the PNIS, the Voluntary Coca Substitution Program, as well as part of the community leadership. The PNIS was a key part of the peace agreements with the FARC, created to promote the voluntary substitution of illicit crops, with programs to support those who had subsisted on those products. More than 70 social leaders involved with that program have been killed since the signing of the peace agreement, 17 of whom were murdered this year. The implementation of the program has stalled, as pressure to grow coca, both from armed groups and economic necessity, remains a key factor. Colombia's media landscape is experiencing tectonic shifts, as magazine Semana, one of the country's leading weeklies and a key center for investigative journalism, lost numerous leadership figures and most of its star journalists. Under new leadership, the magazine has moved towards a digital model, aiming to make more profit by publishing more content, along with sensationalist opinion pieces and controversial interviews. Due to these changes and other editorial differences, the director, Ricardo Calderón, quit the magazine, triggering a wave of resignations, including most of the editorial team, led by Alejandro Santos, influential columnist María Jimena Tuzán, and renowned cartoonist Vlado. The founder, Felipe López, sold his half of the company, and editor-in-chief Rodrigo Pardo announced his resignation too. The magazine had already lost key journalists Daniel Coronel and Daniel Samper Ospina earlier in the year. Controversial right-winger Vicky Davila is now in editorial control. Colombia's potato farmers are facing a crisis due to a drop in demand, as well as high farming costs. Tons of potatoes are at risk of rotting where they sit, and authorities have launched a national campaign to increase Colombia's potato consumption, with adverts and recipes placed on the radio and in media outlets. Many are saying the government should prevent the import of potatoes. Banco de Occidente has been fined the equivalent of $137,000 for evading obligations relating to money laundering and for not providing the information required by the Attorney General's office. The fine was under appeal, but a final judgment has now been passed. It is the latest in a series of fines for this bank over the last two decades, which now number more than 10. The bank is part of Grupo Aval, a conglomerate owned by Luis Carlos Sarmiento, one of Colombia's richest men. Grupo Aval owns five banks, the country's largest pension fund, and multiple stockbroking companies. Colombia has now reached 1.2 million cases of coronavirus, and 34,000 people have died of the disease. Curfews and bans on the sale of alcohol continue to be implemented piecemeal in cities across the country, but it is maintained by the government that full lockdown will not be enforced again. That was the week's newscast, and now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And this is the final segment of our Colombia Calling podcast this week. And as I mentioned previously, we're going to explore something that has had quite an impact on Colombia. We're taking history, we're taking politics, but we're going to twin them with the football team, the Selección Nacional, the Cafeteros. And most of you will remember, those of you who are Colombianists or just fans of the beautiful game, will remember the scandal surrounding the gol de Yepes. So the goal of Mario Alberto Yepes, I think it's his name, yes, Mario Alberto Yepes against Brazil on the 4th of July, 2014, in the city of Fortaleza, so the northeast of Brazil, and then it was disallowed And this created all sorts. It's kind of one of those butterfly effects. If a butterfly flaps its wings, you know, something like that. So, with regards to this, we've got a historian in Santander and a football aficionado who wants to be able to, he wants to sort of, he's done pieces on this. He's written, he's explored this very theme. Had the goal been allowed, would we have a different situation? Would things have, you know, let's say, unraveled or developed differently in Colombia had Yepes's goal gone in? 2-2, we go to penalties. Let's say that someone, you know, a Brazilian player knocks one over the crossbar and Colombia goes through to the semi-finals for the first ever time in their history. We're going to explore this a bit more. Now, my very special guest is on the line from Santander. He's in Bucaramanga. His name's Miguel Cuadros. He's a magister in history from Binghamton University in New York. He's originally from San Vicente de Chucurí, which is a fascinating part of Santander. So let me just say, welcome on the Colombian Calling podcast, Miguel.
Hey, Richard. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure for me to be here. I've been following your podcast since, I guess, 2 years ago. And it's amazing. It's a wonderful opportunity to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for the invitation.
No, well, of course, the flattery will get you absolutely everywhere. Now, so let's put the context again. It's the World Cup. It's in Brazil. So it's on the very continent we are in right now. Colombia was, we just come off that high, you know, the James Rodriguez goal, the goal of the tournament against Uruguay, which was, you know, one of the most technically gifted goals we've seen or we saw in that competition. And we went into the Brazil game confident, but with that trepidation. It's Brazil. We're, you know, there's a mental block, isn't there, when it comes to Brazil. And it wasn't the greatest Brazil team. I mean, they're great players and so on, and individuals, but it was Brazil in Brazil. And I think Colombia could have taken it. And so your investigation and your writing on this subject, you suggest that, and you suggest, or you investigate it, that there's a different, Colombia's politics could have unraveled differently. So let's go into that a little bit. What have you been doing on this topic?
Okay, so let me start clarifying that this began actually as a dream that I have. You know, one night I was just, I don't know, thinking about football. I went to bed, and suddenly in that dream, that's the situation that motivated me to write the piece or starting investigating this. In that dream, Yepes' goals against Brazil was allowed. Colombia's national team went to penalties. They defeated Brazil in penalties. They went to the semifinals, and in spite they lost in semifinals against Germany. This was like a huge thing, like never seen before. And this huge sporting success motivated or like kind of strengthened the leadership of political leaders against the football team, against peace, around peace, and you know, and all the ideas that was about, and kind of like things were different. And the funny thing is that after that, so the results of the 2016 plebiscite about peace, the election about peace, the voting about peace, like people went, like the success of the national team has been in my dream. Of course, I'm talking all the time about my dream and all this stuff. Due to that, like national emotion, like that collective feeling of the soccer team, the football team, during the 2016 election, the voting, like the peace process got a huge support. And then we went to the 2018 presidential elections. And that was the funny moment that I woke up at that moment in my dream. Like, and this is true. Like, people don't believe this. When I start talking with friends and when I even start like sharing the piece that I wrote in my blog, people were telling me like, you know, but what if we actually defeated Germany? What if actually, you know, it wasn't Germany, it was another team? And it was like, I don't know. That was my dream. I'm trying to like be stick to what I remember of that. But that was the case. So I I was kind of like for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, it's like, you know, with this idea in my mind all the time, like, really, like, first of all, like, what do I make of this? You know, it's like, how do I try to kind of like just not let it go, but kind of like make sense of it? And I started like, okay, so I'm a historian. I've been following like Colombian politics, like as a professional thing, you know, for studying, research, whatever. And I'm also a big, big, big football fan. And I've been trying to connect in a very informal way, because that's kind of like another interesting thing. I don't consider myself like a football historian or a sport historian. Kind of like my education, my training, my research was more like, say, traditional, you know, like more economic, political themes, especially because I studied in a school, a history school here in Santander, at Universidad Industrial de Santander, that was kind of very old-fashioned, very traditional. You know, you would study like current topics, civil wars of the 19th century. We study like very like the hardcore things, the classical things. So there wasn't like a big opportunity to maybe incorporate or get into, for instance, the history of football in Colombia. Mm-hmm. But when I was doing my master's in the States, I started like getting in touch with people, getting in touch with getting aware of books, research, projects, ideas, even collectives. You know, there's a, in the States, there is, for instance, a group of scholars that have like a something called the Football Scholars Forum. There is a guy I met that studies Latin American history in Argentina, Alex Galarza. He's part of that against along with other people from Michigan State University, from other universities. And I was like, okay, this is amazing. So I started like, it was kind of an informal thing, because it's still my thesis and my research for the master was about like the geographical knowledge of Colombia in the 19th century, in the second half of the 19th century, kind of like more traditional thing. So that this was like a parallel thing, you know, like very, I don't know, hobby, I don't know, whatever, like for my own time. So I've been in touch with these people. I've been reading these works, and I decided, okay, I'm going to try to make sense of this. I'm not just going to let it go, like, you know, or just let it in an informal way. And yeah, it's a dream. It's kind of like something very, I don't know, sudden, very random at some point. But I will try to make something out of it. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about it. I have like this personal blog that kind of I try to write things about football since I guess it was I started it around 1 year ago, and I have some pieces, kind of like random things. I wrote about France 98. That was kind of like a big thing for me, and I was actually at the moment the last World Cup that I have witnessed. You know, when. After that, we will have to wait it until mm-hmm. we have to wait until 2014. So okay, I wrote some pieces. I have participated in a radio program here at WIS, at the cultural radio station of the university, and I decided, okay, let's try to figure this out. And the good thing is that due to all these contacts about football history, about the possibility of studying, connecting football, politics, society, history. I found the work of someone you have had actually two times, I guess, in this program, Peter Watson. I haven't had the chance to meet Peter personally, but our virtual interaction and reading his work, this guy is amazing. Like the kind of work he does is awesome. And it was great because I started reading his work, his focus, especially in that period, how the Colombian president, Juan Manuel Santos, and in general, like the Colombian state in that period, kind of trying to connect football with the peace process, trying to connect football with the idea of a kind of a new version of Colombia, a new project for Colombia around several aspects, you know. Mm. And that was amazing. And because all the time I was trying to answer one fundamental question. Was like, is this possible? I mean, is this just my delusion, my dream, my kind of like my willing, my kind of like my idea, my hopes of something different, or in a hypothetical world, yet this would have been like just don't know, like utopian or something kind of like really possible, kind of like close to reality. And the kind of funny thing was that, as you said, we have this idea of the butterfly effect. We really don't know. I don't believe in counterfactual history at some point, but I thought yet it was an interesting point. And kind of like the work from Peter provided me a nice approach and a really important background for this topic. And according to the research from Peter, and I think this is something I will try to keep digging at some point, maybe as a parallel thing, as has been the case. It was a real possibility, you know, because the Santos government invested so much in changing the image of football and in using this as a platform for peace, that it was really possible. I mean, it was really possible that for some, you know, kind of like this, now that we are in the context of the U.S. elections, you know, this kind of like people that maybe is not sure, this kind of like swing vote, people that maybe 1 year vote for one thing and then vote for what, the other, the election vote for another thing. I had the impression that, you know, maybe this collective sense of the Colombian team, the football, could contribute to that. You know, if the Colombian government had that in mind, they could have used that, because they already have been doing that. So they could just kind of like go a little bit further, use that as part of the 2016 election about the peace accords. And maybe, you know, and if we think about it, the margin was so tight, you know, yeah. was around like less than 50,000 votes. I don't remember exactly. So who knows? Who knows? 50,000 aficionados of Colombian football, 50,000 people that, according to their view of the world, because that's kind of the thing. Like, for some people, maybe they don't get too much into politics, or the way they get into politics is like very, it depends on many other things. And how about they use their view of football to orient their political choices, and maybe go with the idea that, okay, the Colombian football team showed us that unity, you know, like new values, the possibility of a new society, and this could be connected with peace. What about if we keep doing that? Kind of like, maybe if they connected, you know, a peaceful society, a successful team, you know, a united society, a united team. How about that? It was really fun and really interesting to find that, according to Pete's research, that was a possibility, right? You know, that was that wasn't just like my delusion, or that wasn't like really far from reality. That was a choice. Of course, there would have been another aspects. There would have been other possibilities. Some people, after I published this piece, and friends and all this stuff, you know, kind of like commenting, you know, but what about some people like Farid, you know, that Farid Mondragon, that was a kind of like a big figure in that team, because it was like the veteran, you know, the leader. And we know after his retirement from football the last year, how has he like been like really, you know, close to the current government, close to kind of like very, very like uncomfortable positions. How about that? How about people that, leaders from the team that maybe have remained silent about problems in the Colombian society? You know, there is also a big conversation about how James, Falcao, maybe the other guys that are like the superstars that have like a big platform, how they have like ignored sometimes the situation, how they have maybe been like, you know, just away from things, in contrast to many other examples, you know, in the States, in our places, even with football too. So I mean, that was also an interesting thing, because my idea wasn't like just to confirm my aspirations or confirm my you know, my ambitions. It was kind of like how we really could connect this to Colombian politics, to Colombian history. And well, there is certainly a different moment here. So that was kind of like the background of the piece. I think there's a lot of things that could be said starting upon that, you know, like previous to that, what happened with football in Colombia, what has been happening after that, if that's kind of like also an indication of things. So, but that's the funny story and about that writing, about that blog post, is it really started as a dream. And And some people actually started to question, you know, but why do we lose to Germany? If we really defeated Brazil, we have the potential to go to the final, be world champion, or even like, you know. And I was like, at that point, it doesn't care. It's like, that was my dream, and I guess what I would like to make out of it is how do we use this as an opportunity, and maybe thinking about how people can be important. Football can be important for people in many ways. In many ways, just fandom and all that. So that was kind of like a context of that funny situation.
But it's great though. I mean, and I'm sure you're not the only Colombian that has dreamt about that goal, because you know one rudimentary search this morning, and I put Erragol de Yepes into Google, and 185,000 results came up in 0.46 seconds. So, I mean, this is a big deal. And of course, in the far west of Bogota, there's a hamburger restaurant called Erragol de Yepes. Somewhere I was driving through somewhere, and I saw that one of the mini micro football places was called Erragol de Yepes and stuff. I mean, this is something that's very present still. And if we think about, and I'll get into that in a second, but if we think about the politics, but think, you know, President Santos has put that into context. He was first elected in 2010, second term in 2018. So he got his re-election in June 2014. So it's only a month prior to the game. And I think you could put this together with I don't think it needs to be a side project anymore. Although I don't think you can, you know, do an academic document making reference to your dream. But I think you could put together like Eduardo Galeano's Football in Sun and Shadow. You could put what's going on in Colombia while the games are being played. You know, it would be very obviously. I mean, there's not so much rosy news coming out of Colombia all the time, not so much colorful news, but you know, like Eduardo Galeano writes about an event or a game, and then at the bottom in a little excerpt says, you know, and in Guatemala Jacobo Arbenz was being overthrown in 1964, you know. And so it puts it into context to that. And of course we know what's happened with football around the world. Well, I mean, hooligans were, you know, there was politics in there too. There was the whole working class ethic, and then of course you've got, you know, there was the football war, which was of course a spark that occurred, you know, the war, the conflict, the spat between Honduras and El Salvador was going to happen, but it was a football match that pushed it over the edge. And when you think of like Central American games, like versus the US, I say, again, Guatemala, I lived there for a while, so it's always in my head, you know, they're seen as the oppressor, the US, to Guatemala and stuff, because of the influence in the civil wars. And so there's so much between football and politics and national and international politics. We go back to the Santos second term. Yeah, so 2012, he reveals that there have been secret talks and it's getting moved to Cuba with the FARC. And then peace is signed on the 26th of September in Cartagena in 2016. The referendum takes place, the plebiscite, on the 2nd of October. And as you said, the tiny, tiny majority beats out. And it's not them voting against peace. Let's clarify that. They're voting against the deal. So it's pushed back to Congress and changes are made, and the altered peace deal is then pushed through Congress, and it put into 12th of November. It's approved and to be, you know, put into play on the 1st of December. So it's not as if it was unethical because the changes were put in there. Could you imagine that if we were feeling, if we were buoyed by this feeling of national pride and I'm very careful about national pride, but everybody here, that, you know, it's the uniting theme. Even this, you know, the president we have at the moment, Ivan Duque, where did he go one of his international visits, he gave the football shirt to someone, and you're like, well, you didn't win the World Cup. It's not like Brazil giving a football shirt. It's not like Germany giving a football. But he gave
I guess
a
it was France.
Was it France? In France?
With Macron, I guess.
Yeah. but it shows that it is a genuine symbol of Colombia. I don't believe he should have given a football shirt, but it goes to show how important the politics and the sport are together in the Colombia. And then when you look at a game happening here in Bordeaux, anyway, everyone has a yellow shirt on. Everyone, you're allowed to go to work in a yellow shirt. In England, we wouldn't do that because it would be seen as like, you know, the sort of kind of an ultra right wing kind of thing, because they like to wear those shirts when they're in like fascist marches and so on. But think of the politics around it. I mean, we've had a lot of debates in the recent years. You've got your Colin Kaepernick in the US, mm-hmm. the former San Francisco 49ers, I guess he's a running back, quarterback, or whatever. I don't know. I mean, that's a huge debate. And it would be so interesting to know or to hear from actual, you know, present players, not so much Farid Mondragon cozying up to Marta Lucia Ramirez, vice president, which I don't know if it's done him any favors. I don't know. But then that's my politics coming into it. But it would be really interesting to know what, you know, Radamel Falcao, but things I worry because, you know, he's a Samarian, he's from Santa Marta, but his parents are Antiochian. So we know how they vote. And James Rodriguez, is he originally from Cúcuta and then moved to Antioquia? So I kind of assume I know how he'd vote, but it'd be nice to hear from people, let's say, you know, from the interior or from the Chocó, or from Valle, where a lot of the players come from these really impoverished towns, Jamundi, you know, Santa Fe. I want to see Cuadrado. He's from
Necoclí.
Necoclí, all sorts of problems in Necoclí. I've been to Necoclí. You know, it would be really interesting. You know, blighted by the guerrilla, blighted by the next guerrilla group, then blighted by the paramilitaries, and to this day, an unsafe place beyond the, you know, urban area, a particularly unsafe place. So I think that politics and football in Colombia almost go hand in hand when we talk about these things. So what worries me here is that every time we seem to have an election or, you know, presidential or local election, there's a World Cup or there's a Copa America, always. And I'm like, can they not, you know, suspend the Copa America 1 year or push it? Because it's every 2 years, isn't it, the Copa America? And then it delays a year if it falls on a World Cup year. And it always tends to, like, there's national or international, national or local elections, and you're like, oh, please. And what do they say here? Pani Circo?
Mm-hmm.
Pani Circo. So it's like... I don't know. It's like fodder for the masses. It's like opiate
like
for
a romantic, the masses. You know, like a romantic, like the Coliseum, the spectacle and the stuff.
So, I mean, how do you feel about this? I mean, you sort of said, would it be really interesting to know how the players might react? And, you know, we get someone who's overtly political, like Colin Kaepernick, and for all the right reasons, in my opinion, for all the right reasons. And, you know, look at the influence that football players around the world in league games, in various leagues, take a knee before the kickoff. I mean, it's huge. But I think of then is before Brexit. I mean, and of course, this is my own heritage here. And that, I guess it was the Euro Cup or whatever was going on. And a journalist asked Harry Kane. And let's be honest that football players aren't known maybe for their political news and their knowledge of current events. You know, it's football and it's this. And he said, you know, he said, oh, I don't really have an opinion on that. I'm just focusing on the game. And of course, he was lambasted in the press for this. And you're like, well, should he have one? Well, of course, you should have an opinion. Should he have shared it? I don't know. You can argue both ways. So, I mean, how do you feel on this front about this? Because the politics, again, and the football, if you've got a president who's happy to go overseas on state visits and give a football shirt out, he is signifying that the football team is a national symbol, a uniting symbol for Colombia. So, I mean, should we have the voices of our cafeteros declaring allegiances to one side or the other?
Well, let me try to break this into at least 3 points, right? I guess the first one would be like, it's kind of interesting, beyond like political opinions or sympathies. Iván Duque, current Colombian president, I guess is the first Colombian president that is like genuinely a football fan. You know, other presidents, you know, they have to manifest. I guess Santos kind of like, he says, you know, I'm a fan of Santa Fe, and he used all the political platform, but I don't know how much he's like a passionate, a huge fan. As far as I've been able to follow the news and all the stuff, I remember like Duque all the time used his comment about his football passion. He's fan of America. He always talk about like, you know, the in the 80s, you know, America, the these kind of things that they lost three consecutive Copa Libertadores and all the stuff. And he kind of like, I guess regarding like trying to separate just for a second politics, he's the first, in my opinion, the first genuinely football fan. You know, just like the guy that has to go there and use the shirt just because, you know, the protocol, the diplomacy, or the whatever we have to show to the press, right? Or we have, or we want to use the we want to capitalize this for politics, right? Even though we don't know anything, like, you know, this famous anecdote of Alberto Lleras in 1962 when he was like, you know, first time Colombia qualified for a World Cup, and he was like in the airport, you know, trying to cheer the guys, and he says like, hey guys, I hope you make a lot of baskets. You know, he thought they were like basketball players. So that kind of like gives you a context. And I guess all, at least from the 80s, several presidents have tried to use football. But I guess Duque is the one that is like genuinely a football fan. That doesn't like, you know, like, that makes me like forgive him or something, or like being soft on the politics side. But I guess that's what happened. You know, he's real. He's a real football fan. That's why maybe he decided to do that. I wouldn't do that also. I mean, I guess that's kind of like out of place. But that, I would say that's one point. The other thing I see in regarding players, I mean, it's kind of strange because, you know, you come in the case of Colin Kaepernick, and, you know, also I would like to say recently, in the NBA, you know, what they have taken about what the position they have taken, especially the black players, about the Black Lives Matter, what, for instance, Rashford has done in England about like this program for kids for breakfast, and in general, like this idea. And it's kind of strange because if you think about like, okay, well, black people in the States, is because they feel that there is a problem, they have lived that. I guess Rashford in the UK, coming from like humble origins, feeling the same thing. And if we think about the Colombian players, you mentioned Cuadrado. I mean, Cuadrado is a victim of violence. His father was killed due to these security concerns, in the security problems in Ecoclí, and they have to go to Medellin, escaping from that. Think about Quintero, that maybe recently is not like in the lineup, but he was a huge thing in the 2014. His father, he's disappeared. He's a victim of disappearance from the States. It says that it's paramilitary things or kind of like that. And he kind of like had been a little bit active, but he's always like trying to, you know, don't cross the line, like trying to be cautious about crossing the line. But there is a lot of stories. I mean, like a lot of these players have come from like really violent places, come from like really traumatic situations regarding the armed conflict and the violence. And I guess they could have, like, you know, at least expressed that. I understand that, for instance, they don't want to get into that, you know, like that conversation. They feel that is kind of like out of their business sometimes, that it can affect them. I don't know, you know, these players do a lot of business, you know, advertisement in Colombia, a lot of sponsor things, you know, they have, and maybe they don't want to, you know, they don't want to look too much political, so that would prevent that. But I guess, yes, there is a lot of things that could be said. I wish, you know, they have the opportunity, because at some point, I mean, most of them play in Europe. They wouldn't have much trouble with that. They earn enough, I guess. their finances won't be affected. And I don't think, you know, I can't tell for the reaction of other people, but I mean, that would be, for me, that would be a positive thing. I don't say like, you know, go out and kind of like accuse someone or get into the opposition. It's just like, try to use your platform, try to show a little bit more like social conscious, you know, and even, I mean, like, especially thinking into those examples that I mentioned, Quintero, maybe Cuadrado, let's think about Jerry Mina. He's from like a very, like these areas from Nariño that like really, really violent, really, really affected from all the problem. Or think about like how a lot of them actually grew in several places, like in Medellin, Cali, or Bogota, because actually their family have to escape from violence, you know? And that's kind of another story that needs to be told, you know, this, because in Colombia, we know that regional things play a lot of in politics, in culture, in football too. Mm. There was like this famous idea in the 90s, and this is something also Peter has analyzed in one of his recent pieces, you know, this idea of like, kind of like why the 90s football was in the 90s, you know, the 5-0, the 94, 98, the Italia 90, why that team was so successful. And at some point, the coach, Maturana, like gave a statement to the press saying that it was because the team symbolized like the regional diversity, you know, and it's like we have in the middle field, like, you know, our defensive midfielders are from Antioquia because they organize and they manage everything. And then in the attack, we have people from the Pacific and the Caribbean, and they are creative and they are happy, you know, like really stereotypical, like kind of like really getting into that idea. But it's interesting because that's been a way that football has also been understood here in Colombia, the regional thing, you know, the competition. So there was some time ago a discussion about like why the national team has a problem because they have a Rosca Paisa, you know, they have like all these coaches and all this stuff. So I guess there's more opportunities to realize that. So I guess that's for the players, that will be the place. And in lastly, I guess in Colombia we need to think about like for this idea also national identity too, that you mentioned, like for many people in Cauca, in the Caribbean, like in places that maybe have like this strong regional identities, you know, that they first feel like from the region and from their locality other than the national team, these things transform when we go to the Colombian national team, you know, like the idea that the national team is also this union of regions. I really don't know if that's the case for other national teams, you know, like how the composition, the lineups, the player, the fact that normally, you know, well, I guess that, for instance, the race thing, you know, the representation of black players, that would be also an interesting case, let's say with Brazil, maybe with France, with other places. But I think about more the idea of regions, you know, this regionalism, this regional problem in Colombia, that's also a big opportunity, you know, and especially thinking that if we at some point, let's put a parallel, you know, we have the 1991 new constitution that kind of like opens the place for like an institutional, you know, promotion of diversity, like accepting the all this thing. And it's the same time that we have like this national team that is like this collage of regions and all this stuff, like promoting the idea that we are strong because we have diversity in our team. We have people from the Pacific, people from the Caribbean, people from the Andes, right? Mm-hmm. And that idea also that in the context, that's kind of like an idea I'm thinking about right now, like out of my mind. But I guess there is also a big opportunity of that, even beyond just politics, right? Mm. Politics is interesting and it's been used, it will be used, it's very related. We have this scandal about, this idea about like Copa America and the idea that the president is kind of like in the past in 2001, Copa America 2001 that was played here, how there was a lot of like political use to that and all this stuff. And now that supposedly this year we're supposed to play this strange format of like half of the Copa America in Argentina, half of the Copa America here, and how of course there was like a use of that with the Women's World Cup, you know. It's this kind of like really this really like contradicting position. We're trying to ask for Colombia to organize the Women's World Cup, and yet we don't guarantee like the minimum conditions for the Colombian players, for the female Colombian players, for the professional women's league. So kind of like that, I guess that's a really, really, really nice point of conversation for many areas, you know. But I would like also to add that idea that like regional cultural representations of football, you know, the idea that, for instance, Antioquia has a place not only in Colombia as an identity, as a regional identity regarding, you know, business, and other stuff, but also as football, you know, and how do we think about the opportunity for Afro-Colombian players to get into this national thing to football. So that, I guess there's a lot to say, politics, violence, that there is, I mean, that there's actually nothing you cannot relate with football in this case.
It's so very difficult. And I suppose, you know, people like Quintero, Cuadrado, Jerry Mina, you know, they've lifted themselves and had the opportunity through, obviously, amazing skill and the know-how, have lifted themselves from poverty to be able to now perform on a national stage, international stage as well. And, you know, as they say a lot of times in all of these reconciliation talks and so on, is to revisit what has happened to them is to re-victimize them a bit, because of course so it's very difficult. Of course, you know, someone like me, I cannot possibly relate at all to this, and so you have to tread very carefully. However, that said, I would like, you know, for these players not to be overtly political, but to talk perhaps about their experiences in childhood, because children in Colombia and, you know, adolescents and the young will listen. Yeah, it's like, we didn't have running water, for example. You could say this, or I lived in the comuna, or there was a certain hour at nighttime where we weren't allowed out. And it would be more about what's unsaid, what's left not said in their conversations. It's like, it was very difficult sometimes to travel to see family. I think, you know, being able to share the urgent needs and the urgent dangers that they suffered without saying, you know, if they wanted to go through the most awful stories that they lived through, then, you know, welcome to it. But if they were able to suggest some of the issues, I think it would be much more interesting. And again, you would get the young of Colombia and I think potentially the old of Colombia listening and saying, you know, maybe a family in your hometown, San Vicente, Chucuri, who have all sorts of conflicting ideas, because you grew up in the birthplace of the ELN and then a place which was so heavily hammered by the paramilitary. So you've got, I bet you've got a very divided community there regarding these things. And some people remember one thing and other people are. But if you could have some people saying, and maybe then people could relate and then they could talk, because we could have this national conversation which is needed, rather than trying to sweep it away as if nothing happened. Ah, the team is wonderful, isn't it great? It ties the country together. It's a real demonstration of national unity. But in truth, when we talk about it, one of Colombia's most immense problems is identity and, of course, the regionalism between each department here. So you've said it, but I don't know. I mean, we've been talking, and I think we could talk for hours on this. And you did say that Ivan Duque is like the first football fan. And of course, we make fun of him because everywhere he goes, he seems to do keepy uppies. You know, everywhere he goes, and I don't know, do I like this? Is this statesmanlike? Is it the right moment? I don't know. I've kind of got tired. I kind of just wish he'd just get on and do something. But, you know, when you watch Santos, he looked more or less comfortable in the yellow shirt. Uribe just looked uncomfortable. And let's not get into Pastrana. I don't want to get into him. He just looks like he should be in an upper class restaurant somewhere sipping martinis.
Playing
polo, that's right. And Uribe should be on his horse with his Pasofino going off to the Gallera to watch a cockfight. I mean, as I close this down, as we close this conversation down, how do you see things developing? Because we're playing the qualification games for the World Cup now. We've already started because it's an immense procedure here for South America. Colombia are doing okay. We're doing okay. We've got the right results in the right places, I would say. But how do you see this? Because we're halfway through Ivan Duque's term. The next World Cup is, well, I'll let you fill us in.
Yeah. Well, this, I actually would like to point out that if we really, if we get into the World Cup for Qatar, this will be the first time that our presidential elections won't coincide with the World Cup, because due to the weather, the World Cup will be like kind of like November, December 2022, and the election will be like previously, like May, and we will have new president in August 2022. So this is will be like a strange situation, because for me, I have like vivid memories of like the 90s, the 94, 98, actually going back to 2014, 2018. Like for me, there is like a no way to separate football to politics also due to that, because every time I think about a World Cup, my memories of the World Cup, at the same time, I have the memories of the political thing. So in 2022, in the also controversial World Cup in Qatar, that will be a whole team on its own. we will first time have like that difference. That's kind of like strange. So I guess that would be something to have into account. So it seems that maybe the use that the politicians can make of that will be different, because we won't be at that point. I don't know if we will be already like qualified or not. And depending on that, they will be able to use that or not. What I see is that there is a lot of like conversations, but I also think that the future actually looks or needs to be, I guess, or would like, it's important to think also about internal matters, because we tend to think about the national team, and let's think about the national teams, they're superstars. They play in Europe. They live a different life. And I think the look that we have to give to football also needs to pay attention to the local thing, the national, like the internal thing, how our league has been like very impoverished, you know, like very poor right now. International competition is very low. A lot of problems about like, you know, labor rights for the players. Let's not get into the women thing. That is a whole thing on its own. You know, all these kind of like real legal things that actually football in Colombia, like at the level of clubs, is very like very chaotic, very like actually, you know, we have this also this background of drug dealing, you know, money laundering. So I guess also in addition to that, regardless of the World Cup, the presidential use, for me, like I would like to think about like also new opportunities to give like this interior look, you know, like look to the internal problems, and also try to look beyond just like national teams. Look about how people in the regions use football, like in marginalized regions, in marginalized communities, use football to provide an opportunity for kids to get like community works, community programs, right? To like kind of provide a different scenario for many communities. I will say that's for me that's where the interesting things are. Not just like as you said, the national team, the pride, whatever, they can use that. In spite of my dream that, you know, it's kind of like these ideas, and I will accept that as long as this allow us to go into the, you know, something I can take. That's something I can take. But yeah, if we just get into that, it can turn like just, you know, nationalistic, even like ultra right politics and all this stuff. So I hope we, regardless if we qualify to the World Cup or not, I think we have chances. Let's see. This will be a different scenario, but I hope in 2 years we also have the opportunity to, you know, that to think more about these internal aspects. To, I mean, I'm trying to be aware of like what happened with the women's league. You know, like we need to really take this conversation seriously and really get into that. So I hope that will be the themes for the agenda. Who knows? Actually, with these things, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
In the middle of the pandemic, I guess it's even worse.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let me take this moment to say thank you so much for sharing such insightful investigations that you've done, and relating the politics to the football in Colombia, because I really don't think when the football comes out, and you talked about it, money laundering, and you talked about we didn't even get into Andres Escobar, and I don't want to get that. It's when the joy left Colombian football, when you think about the minor leagues, you know, was it FC Valledupar and all of the influences there? I mean, there's so much, and then the poverty that these players come from. Yeah, a lot of the English players are from working class homes, Rashford, and they've lifted themselves up. But it's not the poverty we see and the violence that we see in other parts of Colombia. And so, as I finish this up, we have one last question that I know that everyone will be asking. So, who do you support?
Of course, I support the local team, Atlético Bucaramanga. That is the main professional team here in the region, in Santander.
Yeah.
It's not a successful team, never been champion in Colombia, just one participation in Copa Libertadores 98, the best time of my life, I guess. I remember that really vividly. Yeah, and I support the team, and actually, yeah, right now we're like for 7 years in second division. That was a tough time. Mm-hmm. In 2016, in spite of the actually 2015, we got back into the first league, the top division. We've been like random, sometimes one tournament good, one tournament bad, but we've been trying to be there, and that's the thing. I said that it's just something I cannot get rid of. I wish I wasn't a fan, because the amount of suffering, the amount of time that I lost with that. But who knows? There's something something I cannot change.
this is the theory I have: is you can divorce your wife, but you can't change your football team. and also, my friends who support Bucaramanga call it Artritico Bucaramanga.
Yeah, kind of like playing, with the
old players. Is Magnelli Torres playing there?
No, he's playing in the other regional team, that is Alianza.
That's the one that supposedly I support.
yeah, because that's the thing. Yeah. For a long time, Bucaramanga was the only team in Santander, but I guess 8 years ago, Alianza Petrolera, that is the team from Barrancabermeja, the second city here in Santander, got into the first division. And actually, if we are honest, they have been doing better things than us. So that's kind of strange.
And also, the thing is, I think that, Petrolera and Bucaramanga, the two things about them, and then I promise we'll stop talking to all of you out there, is it's a perfect reflection on my team in England. So we go up, we go down, we have highs, we have lows. The lows are more frequent, but when we have a success, it's euphoria.
Yeah, it's
euphoric. So my team is Watford, and we went down, and we shouldn't have gone down. But we were up for a few years, and it was great. And we got killed in the FA Cup final, but we got to the FA Cup final, and we take that as the glory. Uh-huh. It's not you. Yeah. It's the highs and lows. So you cannot be a glory hunter, and you cannot just choose Liverpool or Manchester United or Chelsea. You have to have a history, and of course, in a regional thing. Anyway. We'll stop now. I've been talking to Miguel Cuadros, who is a history magister from Binghamton University in New York, and he's in Bucaramanga at the moment. And we've had a great conversation about politics and football and culture and society. We really have enveloped all of these things. So let me just say thank you so much for your time. And I know you're busy. And in the background of your image here, I can see there are football pitches, and there's some goalkeeper jumping.
Yeah. I have a collection of things.
So therefore, we are talking to the right guy about this thing. And thank you for Peter Watson for putting us in touch, because he's, of course, the expert on this politics and politics and football in Colombia. So have a good rest of your day there, and all the best to the Selección and to Atlético Bucaramanga, Miguel. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. A pleasure, Richard.
Bye-bye. This has been the final segment of this episode of the Colombia Calling podcast. I've been Richard McCall talking to Miguel Cuadros. We ran on a little bit, but it's been a fun conversation. Please be sure to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and so on. And yes, I've reinitiated the Patreon campaign. So those of you who pledge $25 or more per month are going to be in early next year getting t-shirts or stickers or mugs in the post as a thank you. So thank you. Thank you again, everyone, for listening, and bye-bye.
tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.